You know, every August, volunteers across Wisconsin gather to monitor dozens of Wisconsin water bodies. It's called the Aquatic Invasive Species Snapshot Day. And it's happening again this Saturday. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Emily Heald, who is a Rivers Outreach Specialist for the Aquatic Invasive Species Program of UW Extension's Natural Resources Institute. Emily coordinates the Aquatic Invasive Species Snapshot Day and does it in partnership with the Wisconsin DNR, Department of Natural Resources. Do you live near a lake or a stream? Is it a healthy habitat for fish and waterfowl? Do you know how to identify invasive aquatic species? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Emily Heald, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks, Larry. It's fun to be here.
Let's talk some more about what the event is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Snapshot implies taking photos, but it's not that kind of snapshot.
Yeah, well, there are photos involved.
Oh, of course.
If people think they find anything, they take photos. But it's more of like a quick snapshot in time of the state of aquatic invasive species in Wisconsin.
And how do you define aquatic invasive species?
Aquatic invasive species, those are plants and animals that they're usually non-native to our area. They're introduced and they may negatively impact habitat or wildlife, recreation, the economy. They can be very costly to manage. And oftentimes this looks like disrupting the food web, outcompeting native species for habitat and for food.
Okay, so which ones are causing the most, the biggest problems in our Wisconsin waterways?
It's funny. That's the question I always get as soon as we start talking about aquatic invasive species. But it's really tough to rank them. That's why for this event, we have a whole series of aquatic invasive species that site leaders, our local site leaders, can teach people how to identify, and they choose the ones that are most locally relevant. So a species of concern in one part of the state, you know, that species might not necessarily be established in another part of the state.
Yeah. So what do you hope people get out of this event by participating?
Yeah, there are a lot of really great outcomes from this event. You know, first and foremost, people are getting that outreach and education component, just learning about what aquatic invasive species are, being able to identify them. You know, even if they come away from the event not remembering exactly how to identify something, feeling empowered that if they notice something that looks a little bit out of place, they know where to go to report it. It also gives a lot of really great information to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and our conservation partners about the spread of aquatic invasive species or catching them early if they're new to an area. And then there's also a really great emotional component to the event. We do a lot of feedback surveys for our volunteers after the event, and they always report feeling really great about helping the environment. They say that they enjoy meeting people with similar interests and seeing new water bodies. So there are a lot of really great outcomes with the event.
How did you get started, this event?
So this event, we're in our 12th year right now, and it started in 2014. It was originally coordinated by the fabulous organization Wisconsin River Alliance,
mm-hmm.
and they coordinated it for a really long time. It started initially as a way to increase monitoring efforts on rivers and streams. There was initially a lot of focus on lakes. And the event was actually originally called Bridge Snapshot Day because bridge crossings on streams are areas where folks are most likely to go to dump aquariums that might have species that could become invasive. And the event has grown hugely since then, and UW-Madison Division of Extension took over coordination in 2021. And we still have a lot of the great same partners across the state as we had before. We're still partnering very closely with the Wisconsin DNR, too.
So it's pretty cool. How did you get involved in all? I mean, what's your background and how did you?
Yeah, I've been working with invasive species since grad school, back, you know, about 10 years ago. And I started more in the science realm of things. I was working with rainbow smelt in northern Wisconsin. And as part of that, we did a lot of outreach. And I realized that I really love teaching people about aquatic invasive species and kind of seeing those light bulb moments of people, you know, gaining new perspectives and becoming interested in things in different ways. So I've made a career out of teaching aquatic invasive species now. I'm really happy about it.
Well, let's talk. How many volunteers typically are you going to get?
Last year we had 159 participants. This year it's looking like it's going to grow more than that. And they're from all over Wisconsin, from all parts of the state. We have urban sites, we have really rural sites, and yeah, they come from all over.
That is a very, very cool. And let's talk about the participation part of it. Can you still register to be?
Yep, definitely. So the event is Saturday, August 9th, and registration is open until noon on Friday, August 8th. Our site leaders need a little bit of time to prepare for how many people are coming.
Sure. And what happens when somebody shows up then?
So there are over 25 sites across the state to choose from. So people can find a site near them for a training location. And once the volunteer arrives at the site, there will be a local site leader. Usually they're from a county conservation department, land and water, or some sort of nonprofit like a watershed group, nature center, friends group. And the site leader will teach the volunteers how to identify a small handful of locally relevant aquatic invasive species and how to monitor for them. And then after that, the volunteers will fan out to local monitoring sites to search for those aquatic invasive species. They take pictures, they grab samples, and they bring them back to the training site to be verified by the site leader.
And then do they pull them out, go back and pull them out, or what do they do?
In some cases, it depends on what the population of the aquatic invasive species is looking like. If it's a new detection and maybe it's a plant, then it's totally possible in a lot of cases to go back and remove those and manage that population effectively. Or if it's an invasive species, something like an invasive snail or an invasive mussel, those are difficult, if not impossible, to fully remove from a system, but knowing about it sooner than later helps us to really ramp up education and outreach efforts in that area so that things don't spread.
Yeah. How do you keep that? I mean, if you got something like snails, I mean, what can be done?
How do you keep them contained? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can't remove them, but you're focusing more on containing and education and outreach at that point. And so people can participate in things like the Clean Boats, Clean Waters program. That's through Extension Lakes. That's where folks are stationed at boat landings, and they can educate people using the water as they come and go about the importance of cleaning gear that they're using in the water so that they're not spreading things around. Because those little snails, they can get stuck in your shoes. They're stuck in mud that you might be carrying around on your equipment. And so
stuck on a boat.
Exactly. Yep. You can do different signage efforts, put up interpretive signs at water access points too.
Yeah, I've seen them. Mm-hmm. You can join in, too, with a question. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email. Maybe you've been involved in this already and want to comment on it. Love to hear from that as well, 800-642-1234. John in Sturgeon Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. I wanted to ask your guest whether she could give us an update on the latest techniques and approaches that we have for removing aquatic invasive species. My particular interest in Sturgeon Bay is curly-leaf pondweed and Eurasian water milfoil, but I've been involved in surveying lakes for 20 years now, and it just becomes more and more and more pervasive and a huge problem for recreational boaters in the littoral zone.
Yeah. What do you think, Emily?
I've a couple different thoughts on that. Those, the species that were mentioned, Eurasian water milfoil, curly leaf pondweed, those can be really tough to manage. Curly leaf pondweed produces these reproductive structures that are called turions. And once those fall into the sediment, they can stay viable for over 7 years. So it's a really tough one to manage, because even if you remove the plant, you can't be sure that you're removing all of those little viable structures that are in the sediment. So that's a really tough one. There are different types of chemical treatments that have been used for Eurasian water milfoil and curly leaf pondweed in the past. A lot of times we try not to use those very much because there can be negative impacts on other life in the water. But early detection of those is really useful so that you can go and do manual removal. It's kind of like weeding a garden underwater. It's actually pretty fun to snorkel down and remove aquatic invasive plants. If things start to get really overgrown, that's a really tough one because, you know, you don't want to keep dumping chemicals into the water over time. Sometimes it can be tough to continually hand harvest and pull things. And so sometimes you're met with just kind of having to learn to live with things and learn to be in balance with things in different ways and accepting what's going on in different systems. And so that can look like aquatic weed harvesters. We see those in the Madison area a lot. That's kind of like cutting the grass through through an aquatic system so that boats and other people recreating can use the area. Also, a lot of times we tend to see these species ebb and flow quite a bit. So if they seem like they're really aggressive 1 year and taking over time, we can see that they start to play a little bit more nicely and integrate themselves into a system.
Yeah, interesting. John, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Scott in Racine, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Larry, and compliments to Emily. You've got a gift for explaining things in a way that everyone can understand. Some very interesting. My question is a little different. My daughter is very has a passion for wildlife ecology. She's headed off to college. And I am curious as to your opinion of kind of the career opportunities and the job market and kind of the overall career picture for what you do.
Yeah, that's a good question. Being in college, you know, you always start kind of at that intern level, you know, and getting as much experience as you can. I'm honestly not super in touch with that job market right now, just because I don't work with that age group as much anymore. But there's so many opportunities and there's so many different types of listservs that you can be on to find those job opportunities. Volunteering is a really good one. I know, you know, not getting paid isn't always fun, but the experience is usually really worthwhile. Asking your professors if they have any projects that you can help volunteer on. Ask them if they know anyone else that needs a hand, and just kind of slowly work your way up from there. The more experience that you can get doing a lot of different things and build that passion and find what really interests you, I think that, you know, getting that experience and then getting that passion are things that really set people apart in the job market.
Yeah. I was thinking about my daughter who is a year out from graduation or has graduated, but her professor had some contacts within the DNR, and she wound up on a summer internship on water quality and both water and fish. So she was doing both, and it was you know, a good 8-week project that looked pretty good on her resume, among other. I mean, she did other internships as well, but that was one that was useful. So I like your idea about the professor, but also places like the DNR or other organizations.
Nature centers are always looking for volunteers.
Yeah, and even some of the earlier groups, the water-related groups, for example, that you mentioned, probably are looking for volunteers
or interns. Yes, definitely.
So she should probably be directing. She may direct her attention in those ways too.
Yep.
And the market, you never know about the market.
It's hard to predict that one. Yeah.
So Scott, a good luck to your daughter, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Emily Heald, our guest today, Rivers Outreach Specialist for the Aquatic Invasive Species Program of UW Extension's Natural Resources Institute. We're talking about this snapshot day that is coming up Saturday, August 9th, so coming right up now. She's coordinating the event where you would have a chance to go out and look for unwanted plants and animals in lakes and streams in your neck of the woods. So no matter where you are in the state, you can become involved. You can join in, number 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News as we talk with Emily Heald about the Snapshot Day as we look for aquatic invasive species around the state. The day is coming up this Saturday, and you can participate if you'd like. Grayson Nuglaris has a comment for us, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Grace.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for the show, as usual. This is to the last caller, Scott, whose daughter is heading off for wildlife ecology. I think, you know, Larry, you and I have talked several times over the last 20 years, and I went the whole route of BS, MS, and I piled it higher and deeper. And a couple of things I have to recommend to the young woman is that, number one, volunteer with every professor you can for any project you can, no matter if it's filing stuff. Make sure you take your statistics classes and do well. Take a couple of accounting classes, because if you get to project management stage, you need to know how to properly manage funds and keep track of them. Develop some other skills. Writing skills are very, very, very important. Take even some journalism classes. Take a couple of art classes. Take a photography class, because just as these folks are out documenting invasive aquatic species and taking snapshots, photographs, yes, they really are valuable. And it adds to your skill set. It makes you more attractive to employers. And I dealt with aquatic invasive species because I dealt a lot with the type E botulism outbreaks on the Great Lakes and the zebra mussels and the round gobies. So, yeah, I know a little bit about those lovely aquatic invasive species.
Grace, thank you so much for calling. It sounds like good advice there, Emily.
Definitely, and I like that she hit on the volunteer aspect, because what better way to advance your career than to participate in Snapshot Day?
Yeah, absolutely. Pat in Manitowoc, we'll go to you. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Bella's daughter was looking for internships in Racine. The Parkside University, south of Racine towards Kenosha, has two projects. One is the Pike River Reclamation Project, and the other one is a project to save the Endeavor Endangered Rusty Patch Bee.
At UW Parkside. So there's a couple of opportunities there, again, for, well, anybody who's interested, I think, in an internship opportunity.
Definitely. We have great partners over by Racine at UW Parkside. We also partner quite a bit with UW Sea Grant, and they have a lot of opportunities for young folks there, too. People of all ages, of course.
Yeah. And you were breaking up a little bit there, Pat, but I certainly appreciate very much your call. Are there opportunities that I'm wondering what the DNR officials do when they learn a spot where the aquatics invasives are found?
For a new discovery, early detection? It really depends on the species, kind of like what we talked about earlier, since some of them, the removal efforts can be quite difficult, if not impossible. So those are the instances. Say you found a new population maybe of New Zealand mud snail that we're seeing in the southern part of the state, then that would be an opportunity to really start forming partnerships with local advocacy groups, local conservation groups, to ramp up those education and outreach efforts, making sure that people that are using those waters know that that invasive species is in there and how they can prevent spreading them. And then it also gives the conservation groups and those professionals more ability to study those populations, learn about how quickly their population numbers might increase, how they may be interacting with other native species. But sometimes those early detections, those new discoveries of aquatic invasive species can be things like purple loosestrife. That's a wetland invasive species. We say it likes to keep its feet wet. It doesn't grow in the water. It'll grow next to it. If you find a couple purple loosestrife plants, those are really easy to just dig up, pull out, and, you know, come back next year and see if anything's resprouting. But some of those things can be really easy to manage.
Yeah. I'm sure, and maybe you can comment on them, there are some common aquatic plants
mm-hmm.
that people would be surprised to learn are invasive and detrimental to the environment. Give us some examples of those.
I think it probably just depends where you are in the state and what you're used to seeing. So in urban areas, we see a lot of species that a caller mentioned earlier of Eurasian water milfoil and curly leaf pondweed. In an urban area or areas that are really frequently visited by boats, it's pretty common to go to a boat landing and look off the pier and see those growing in the water. And, you know, everyone thinks of everything that grows in a lake as just weeds. And some of them are. Some of them are aquatic invasive species. But there's also a lot of really beautiful native plants that are in the water that people can learn to appreciate, too.
Yeah. Aren't there some, like, lilies? Water lily?
Yeah.
What are some of those?
White water lilies, those are native, yep. And those are really pretty. I just saw some blooming the other day. They have a big, gorgeous white flower. If you want to learn to appreciate aquatic plants, I think the best way is to go into the water and snorkel around. You don't have to swim necessarily through the plant beds. I know people don't like those touching their feet, but just swim next to them. They're so beautiful. When the light goes through them, it looks like stained glass, and that's where all the animals hang out. You can see so many fish and invertebrates. It's really an amazing world under the water.
I was trying to remember, I saw a video of a woman who had been planting a certain type of, I thought it was a lily, water lily, but it might have been a different one, and realized suddenly that it was actually invasive.
Mm-hmm. It was a water hyacinth. Was
water
that?
Hyacinth, yep. That's right.
Yeah, that was an ornamental plant originally. You could purchase it in nurseries, and that's illegal now because it is quite an aggressive invasive species. But, you know, it just kind of shows that you can be pretty well intentioned and not know about these things. And once you keep an eye out and know what to look for, you learn that they're invasive, just as the gal in our story that we featured. You know, learning that they're invasive and then learning what you can do and feel empowered about how to monitor for invasive species and who to report them to.
Are there, how could you tell if, what are the best ways to know if a waterway is actually healthy?
Oh gosh, there are so many things that go into making a waterway healthy. There's actually a whole program with the Wisconsin DNR dedicated to this, our Healthy Waterways program. And they have a huge equation of things that go into making water healthy. So taking into account aquatic invasive species, different types of pollutants, you know, how much sediment might be in the water. There are all sorts of things.
Yeah, there are even animals, some of the water animals that if they're there, it can be a sign.
Yeah, different types of maybe more rare species or species that are susceptible to pollutants.
So now let's go back here in our last minute and to the participation part of this, which is you can still sign up.
Mm-hmm.
How do you sign up for this?
On our webpage, wateractionvolunteers.org/events, there is a link to the Aquatic Invasive Species Snapshot Day webpage. You can find a little bit more information there, and there's also a link to register. Also just like to note that a snapshot day is really for everyone. It's really for all abilities. We recommend ages 8 and up. Minors must be accompanied by an adult. And, you know, even if you don't want to get in the water, if you don't want to touch aquatic plants, we understand there are plenty of ways to help from the shoreline. But if you're interested in getting in the water, wading in a little bit to get a closer look at things, that's an option too. And you really do not have to be an expert. Feel free to show up with, you know, little to no background. The site leaders are amazing. They're going to teach you everything that you need to know and help you out.
And I bet if type in aquatic invasive species snapshot day,
that'll do it too.
Which might be the easier thing to remember here. Aquatic invasive species snapshot day, and it's coming up this Saturday.
That's right.
But you can still sign up for it, and you'll learn a lot more about aquatic invasives and have some fun in the process. Emily Heald, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it. Emily is a Rivers Outreach Specialist, and we have a link, by the way, on our program page on the Larry Mueller Show to the proper link as well. It was great to have her with us. And thank you for joining in. Appreciate it very much. And a big thanks to our whole team, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnott, our producers, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. Of course, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. I hope you have a good rest of the day, but stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.